Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Ellen Tadd. She's a clairvoyant and the author of The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. So I'd like to talk about you mention in your work that we have three parts to our identity, the spirit, soul, and personality. I'd love for you to give us a flavor of those three parts and how they integrate.
Yes. So this, again, is information that I was taught through my relationship with my guides. I can't take credit for its wisdom, but I've learned the accuracy of it. So what I've been taught is that everyone has an internal spirit, and they define spirit as a spark of the God force. This is our enlightened self. This is the part of our nature that is constant, that never changes or evolves. And one really interesting aspect of this is that each spirit has an individual emphasis. We're not identical, even at this deepest level. One spirit may emphasize creativity, another nurturing, another wisdom. Whatever our particular spiritual emphasis is, it doesn't change. It goes from one life to the next and from one dimension to the next. So I call this our individual instrument in the orchestra of life. And then over the spirit is the container, it's the soul, and some people use these terms interchangeably, but my guides are quite clear that the soul is the container of the spirit, and it's very complicated. It contains all of our past life patterns, traumas, talents, fears, skills, all of the many experiences we've had in the reincarnation process. And in the soul, there's a concept that they call first error, or the original attitude that was not in harmony with our spiritual nature. So, you know, in Christianity, they call it original sin, this original imbalance. But what I've found in my own work is that it's not the same for everyone. We have our own brand of fear, our own brand of confusion. And so this is the beginning of disconnection from our spirit. And when we incarnate, we're guided towards families and circumstances that bring up our particular drama to help us learn and evolve. And then over the soul is our personality, our persona in the world, which is influenced by genetics, conditioning from parents, society, education, our environment, past life influences, and then influence from the spiritual essence. My guides teach that fulfillment comes from actualizing our spiritual nature at the personality level. And this is key because we're taught that fulfillment comes from getting what we want. And I think it's a terrible setup because I don't know anyone who gets everything they want. And what that does is it breeds an unhappy culture, a dissatisfied culture. But if we change the definition of happiness to my guide's definition, which is the actualization of our spiritual nature, then what becomes most important is how are we manifesting ourselves rather than what happens to us.
That's very clear, and it just brings me to the thought about destiny and choice that we might have. So if you could say something about destiny, that things are pre-planned for us, if you say like, all right, so we're born into this family, and so we have a kind of destiny there, or do we have a choice? How much choice do we have? If you can give some examples of that.
I have a chapter on the relationship between destiny and choice, and I actually think for myself that is the most interesting question of all. What is destiny and what is choice? You know, in some spiritual circles, the thought is, or that the idea is, we can create our own reality. In other spiritual circles, the idea is life is destined. Well, what my guides say is that we have a combination of both, and that some people have more destiny in their life than others, and some people have more choice. And that depends on what we're here to contribute and what we're here to learn. And I use the word attunement. Attunement is aligning our conscious mind with our spirit. And when we attune through the deep focus of the third eye or deep listening, a meditative state, we know whether we need to simply just go with something because we just have to accept it, or whether we should initiate change because we can create a very different circumstance. So I think this is a place where people often get confused. I've known people who wait around for their destiny and it doesn't happen. And I've known people who try to take charge and try to control things. And it's really a process of deep listening and deep focus. I have a variety of stories that I tell in that chapter to illustrate the combination of possibilities.
Please share one of those stories with us now that would be helpful to us.
Well, the beginning of this chapter, I tell a really powerful story for me about my daughter. This is what got me to really meditate on the relationship between destiny and choice. It was my daughter's 10th birthday, and we were out in town shopping for birthday party favors and things. And I was running late, and a lot of children were coming to our house at a certain time, and I had to get ready. And I heard a clairaudient voice, my guide, saying, "Stop at that restaurant for lunch." And I was so startled because I'm running late. I didn't think I had the luxury to stop to have lunch at a restaurant. But it was a very strong voice. It was a directive. It wasn't a suggestion, I could tell. So we did. We stopped at this restaurant. I went into the ladies' room to wash my hands, and there on the wall was a poster of the Heimlich maneuver. And I read it
while
I washed my hands.
Which is, if somebody's choking, what you do.
That's right. It's a maneuver of abdominal thrusts that help to dislodge what's blocking the windpipe. And I'd never, you know, I think the Heimlich maneuver was fairly new in that period. But anyway, we went home, ate quickly, went home. When in the middle of the party, the kids were having fun, you know, at the dining room table, eating cake and ice cream. And I was in the kitchen washing dishes, and I suddenly felt a tap on my shoulder. I turned around, and it was my daughter turning blue. I immediately turned her around and did the Heimlich maneuver and saved her life. And I know my personality. If I hadn't just read that poster, I would have gotten afraid. But I had just read this poster. I went into automatic pilot. I did the Heimlich maneuver. I didn't have any anxiety. I didn't have any thought. I just did it. And so after that, I started having meditations and conversations with my guides. Was that destined?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's destined, is everything destined? And this is when they started to explain to me about the relationship between destiny and choice. I also have some stories in my book where we manifest situations, that we are able to create our own reality. So sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. And knowing the difference is one of the great keys to wisdom. And the third eye helps with that discernment.
So you're saying there is some destiny and there is some choice.
Exactly.
I mean, we want it to be black and white and up and down. And
then it's easy.
Yeah.
The fact is, it takes deep listening and deep focus and wisdom to be able to discern that difference. And so I think people have a tendency to want broad generalizations because it's easier to follow. But life really doesn't work that way.
Well, it's exhausting, you know. It seems to take less energy if it's just sort of set down as, okay, this rule will always apply, and then we don't have to think about it anymore. But
it leads to mistakes.
Yes, it does. That would lead to mistakes if it's not true. If that rule is not true and does not apply to all cases, then
yes,
I know that we'd prefer it.
My guides have a great phrase. They've corrected me endlessly. And one of the things they say is, Ellen, pay attention. What is universal and what is unique? And don't make that which is unique universal, because it leads to problems.
That's a wonderful thought to ponder. Uniqueness and universal, and how we take uniqueness and we
try to make it universal.
Apply it like it's going to. And you can see that everywhere. You see that in politics. You see that in communities. You see that in so many places. That's very, very powerful, a powerful thing. And, you know, you've been talking a lot about deep listening. And you even said something in the early part of our conversation about the kind of listening that may be speaking to us can be quite subtle. Mm-hmm. And so what is your suggestion to us about listening for that kind of guidance that we can trust?
Yes. Well, I teach a meditation technique. I often say my absolute best skill is I know how not to think. I just know how to turn off my brain and not think for long periods of time, which is what makes me receptive. So I teach a meditation technique in my book. And, you know, meditation is now a very common word in our culture, but it means different things to different people. And many times people teach meditation and I see it as a relaxation technique, which is wonderful. But to me, it's not real meditation. To me, meditation is the ability to turn off the brain chatter and just not think and listen deeply. So I teach meditation as an X, and the bottom part of the X is everyday thought. The point in the center is stillness. And the upper part of the X is why I meditate. It's revelation, it's connection to the spirit within and without. It's accessing knowledge in ways that go beyond the analytical mind. And so the steps I teach is, the first step is use inspiration to open the crown. My quote, actually by Emily Dickinson, that I brought to you is a quote about opening the top of the head. So inspiration to open the crown. And
just say the quote, then our listeners will want to hear that quote from.
Okay. I grew up in Amherst, Massachusetts, where Emily Dickinson was from. So she was always a part of my life. So this is something she wrote in a letter. It says, if I read a book and it makes my whole body so cold, no fire can warm me, I know that is poetry. If I feel physically as if the top of my head were taken off, I know that is poetry. These are the only ways I know it. And I love that she said, if I feel physically as if the top of my head were taken off, that is the feeling of an open crown chakra. That is the feeling that inspiration has opened the crown, and that is poetry.
And that's the first part, that inspiration of your teaching meditation. And we'll talk about the other parts in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Ellen Tadd. She spells her last name T-A-D-D, Ellen Tadd. She's a clairvoyant, and she's the author of The Infinite View, A Guidebook for Life on Earth. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with clairvoyant Ellen Tad, and she's the author of The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. And her other books include The Wisdom of the Chakras, Tools for Navigating the Complexity of Life. And also you did a book, Death and Letting Go. Ellen, we're talking about the way that you teach meditation and what that means to you. And you had talked about there, it's an X on the bottom of the X and the middle of the X and the top of the X. And we've just talked about the first part, to start with inspiration.
Yes.
What's the next part?
An affirmation, a positive affirmative statement. So rather than going right to no thinking, one thought, one positive thought, I usually suggest people say, I am spirit, I am infinite spirit. As a reminder, I am spirit, infinite spirit. Although another affirmation would do. And then in a kind of lilting or rocking sensation, the affirmation a few times, then hold your mind still. Then the affirmation, then hold your mind still. And gradually elongate the period of time that you can hold your mind still. If brain chatter comes in, go back to the affirmation and work the muscle back and forth, gradually elongating the pause until you can learn to hold the pause longer and longer.
You know, Ellen, that is so, I'm so glad that you described that. That is so helpful. I use a mantra, but I haven't used it where I go back and forth, and sometimes I can my mind gets really quiet at certain times, and other times I'm not successful. So that's a technique that you're helping me to say, okay, fine, it's okay to use a mantra. Then stop and let it go for a little bit and see how long you can do it.
That's right. And so a mantra is another way of saying an affirmation.
Yes, yes.
So exactly.
Yes, very nice, very nice. And then the longer you can just be in that place of calm, no thought, then that's where that in that voice can come in, that inspiration or that wisdom. Or
so once you have the skill, it's kind of like reading. Mm-hmm. Once you have the skill of reading, you can read a lot of different books. Once you have the skill of holding your mind still at will, you can direct the meditation in many, many different ways. So you can sit down and ask for insight about a specific problem and go into silence and see what happens. Or you can ask to, be rejuvenated in a time of fatigue, and you go and you sit in that stillness and you draw on the energy that comes from the spiritual world. So you can use that as a starting point and direct it in many, many ways that are practical and also profound.
I'd like to talk about colors and about, I call it remote viewing, but you call it something else. What is it? Do you?
Projecting consciousness.
Projecting consciousness. So if we want to help somebody or we want to see someone, you talk about how we can send healing light to them. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So one of the basic concepts is that our consciousness is not just contained within our body. You know, there's a lot of interest now in the brain. And, you know, the brain to me is, of course, extremely important to keep healthy. But I know from having out-of-body experiences that when my brain is still in my body, my consciousness leaves the body. And because I've conversed with people in the spiritual world, I know that their consciousness exists even after their body has died. So sometimes I think of the brain as the hardware and the mind as the software. And so one of the points I try to make in the book is that our consciousness is not confined within our body. It can be stretched. And so, you know, I can stretch my consciousness to where someone is and feel how they're doing or get insight into them. And I actually use this skill every day. I'm always stretching my consciousness to get information. And we all do it, but a lot of people don't realize what they're doing. And what I am always interested in is clarifying what the technique is so it can be used at will. And so we can stretch our consciousness to receive knowledge, but we also can be a positive influence. Every time we think about someone, that thought goes to them. If it's a worried thought, that worry goes to them. If it's a loving thought, that loving thought goes to them. Because we are all interconnected, and consciousness is not contained just within the body.
It's pervasive, isn't it?
It's pervasive. And so understanding the power of this, I tell the story in my book of being in my flower garden and having a wonderful day and my guide coming to you, to me, and saying, do you realize that you are touching all of life with your enjoyment? And so when we're unhappy, when we're happy, we are always having an impact in our environment. And just as other people impact us. So using light is a tool that I use quite a bit. I discovered it when I had a colicky baby, and I would send the visualization of golden light to help her to stop crying. And so I learned the visualization of light can be used as a tool to calm people, to bring clarity. It's a diagnostic tool. I have many stories. And when I teach this in class, people can't get a smile off their face because the feeling of golden light feels good.
What would you say, though, if do we have permission to send healing energy to someone? Or I guess you could also use it for not such high things, bad things, you know?
Well, the fact is that every time we think about someone, we are having an impact energetically. Yeah. Every time you think about someone, do you have to ask their permission? May I think about you? It's just the facts. We are always energetically either supporting people's well-being or making it more difficult by every thought and feeling we have. So by choosing a positive energetic support, I don't believe we need to ask permission. But I do feel that because I understand karma, which is cause and effect. And because I believe in reincarnation, I know that life keeps an accurate scorecard and that no one really gets away with anything. So if you use an energetic tool for selfish reasons, there's ramifications for that.
Right, right. Exactly. So that's well said. Thank you for clarifying that. There's one exercise that you have that you do, and I thought it was very powerful, and that was the people that you're with, if you're with a group of people in a workshop situation, to go inside and find out what is my deepest fear and what is my deepest desire, and what is the purpose of that exercise?
Well, earlier in our interview, I talked about the spirit, the soul, and the personality, and also the concept of first error that's in the soul. So when people want to understand what's my spiritual emphasis or what is my first error, which is this deepest confusion, I often talk about the relationship between fear and desire, that what we most fear is linked to our first error. And what we most desire is linked to our spiritual nature. And having taught classes on this topic, we don't all have the same deepest desire, and we do not all have the same deepest fear. For example, someone whose deepest desire is to be loved, their spiritual emphasis is probably about love, and their deepest fear is that they won't be loved. And so what I've found in this relationship is that what we most desire and what we most fear is the same thing, in that you know, that it's the opposite side. And so the more we diminish our fear, the more we actualize our desire.
So if we understand our deepest desire, and this is not like a desire for a new car or a new house or more money or anything, but this is like a deep spiritual desire. At our core. If we really get down there and find that, we can probably figure out what that early error it was in our life, because it's somehow connected to what we also fear.
Yes. So the deepest desire is linked to your spiritual nature. The deepest fear is linked to your first error. And there's always a relationship between the two.
So one would kind of lead to the other. It's a route.
Yes.
To manifesting your it's an antidote.
So,
the antidote to fear.
So my example is that my spiritual nature is wisdom, and my deepest fear is really the fear of ignorance and the ramification of ignorance. So my ignorance or other people's. So my guides say, walk toward your fear and you'll walk through it.
So it's not avoiding that fear. Oh, goodness. I just want to say, Ellen, I thank you so much for being with us today. We could talk about so much more, and I hope that people will pick up your book and go to your website and find out more. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. It really was a pleasure.
Thank you. I've been speaking with Ellen Tadd, clairvoyant and the author of The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. She spells her last name T-A-D-D, Ellen Tadd, and her website is ellentadd.com. Or you can give there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3633.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jacob Lieberman, author of Luminous Life, Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how the science of light unlocks the art of living.
Listen to Scream Therapy, a show about the link between punk rock and mental health, hosted by me, Jason Schurz. I've been part of the music scene for more than 30 years. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and my whole life was thrown sideways. As part of my recovery, I've slowly returned to the music that I love. Join me and my resilient guests for no-holds-barred conversations right here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser University, Thursdays at 12:30 a.m. And until then, take care and be well.